My name is Margaret Taylor, and my date of birth is 9/12/44. Well, we lived in Poultonley Fylde when I was very, very young, and then we moved to Stanhill Village. When I was only 18 months old when we moved there, and my parents, my father was a property owner. He didn't work. He had his own property thing, and my mother looked after us children. There were four of us. There was John, my older brother, and then me, and then my younger brother David, and then my little sister Dorothy. And we lived up in the village, and we had a wonderful, happy childhood, really, because we were never short of anything, and we lived in a very big four-bedroomed house. And yeah, we had a good childhood. It was lovely. We went to West End County Primary School down Aspen Lane, off Stanhill Lane. And I was very good at English, and fair at maths, but my weak subjects were art. I couldn't draw anything to save my life. But I was quite good at PE and things like that. And I liked geography and history, but I wasn't very good at it. But I'm better at it now as I've got older. But at school, it used to frighten me a bit, especially the history about talking about all the wars and the royalty that were, you know, quite challenging, really, some of the royalty from years ago. But other than that, you know, I enjoyed my school life very much. Yeah, I did. What I wanted to do, I wanted to be a nurse, because my cousin, she'd been to the high school, and she was a nurse, and I used to love looking at a picture in a nurse's uniform, and I wanted to do that, but my mother said, under no circumstances are you being a nurse, you're going in the mill. And that was the end of anything I wanted to do, was just, that's it, you can't do it, you've got to go in the mill. I think my dad had better ideas for me, really, but he didn't get a lot to say, because by then my dad had a health issue, and, you know, he left everything to my mother. But my dad sent me to elocution lessons, because my dad had quite a good upbringing, really, and he talked different than what Lancashire people do. And he wanted me to speak like that, so he sent me to elocution lessons when I was 13. And because he didn't like me speaking in the broad Lancashire accent. But when I left school and I had to go in the mill, I rebelled a bit against that, and I started talking in the strong Lancashire accent like all the rest of the mill girls did. Because that's where I've been put. I was 15. I went 15 on the 9th of December, and I left school at the Christmas holidays. Obviously, I went to the mill because my mother and my auntie Jo, who actually worked at the mill as well, sorted all that out for me. So I had to start work. But I started work the day after Boxing Day at Christmas. So I didn't have many days off school before I had to go to work. And worked at Peelford Mill. I went into Peelford Mill, which was the mill in the Stanhill Village itself. Right. It's called a cotton mill girl. From 1959 onwards. I must find a job. I leave school this year. This thought in my head, I am filled with great fear. Can I work at Chagley or be a nurse? I asked Mum. She looked at me strangely. I just struck her dumb. A nurse, she said, shocked. No, you can't. You're going in mill. The one in the village, just over it, Phil. If it's good enough for Auntie Joan, for you it will do. So no more messing, it's settled now for you. So on that first day, I felt full of dread. A job like this, just to earn daily bread. The looms made a loud noise, it was like being in hell. But my instructor consoled me and said, don't worry, you'll do well. I settled down later to learn my new trade. I found it intriguing how the cloth was made, but I still found it noisy, and I didn't like that. But my mum said, you stay there, and that's flat. I worked in Stanhill Mill, and then down West End. but everyone helped me and made me a friend. The work was hard and shift work was not good, but somehow, eventually, textiles gets in your blood. The best was J.B. Smith in so many ways. I even worked permanently just on days. I loved working there, and I was so very blue when the mill closed down in 2002. I said to Simon Hargreaves, "Don't, please don't close my mill." He said, "It's our mill, Margaret, and I'm afraid that we will. I'm retired now and happy in my life day by day, but the memories of my life with me forever will stay." Yeah, well, when I started right at the beginning, towards the end of December that year, I worked from 7:20 at morning till 5:20 at night. And that was because of the bus services. Where the buses ran were what time we could start work. So it was 7:20 till 5:20. And then when I'd been there a few weeks, the foreman came to me and said, "You're too young, you're under 16, you can't work 45 hours, you can only work 40. And they said you can either go home earlier at night or you can have Friday afternoon off. But I went home earlier at night because I used to take papers before I left school, and I wanted to carry on with my evening paper out. So, and we're going home at 4:20 instead of 5:20. I could go to my paper round as well. It added to my pocket money, because other than that, I didn't have anything like it. Yeah, I got £2.08. I didn't spend it on anything. I had to give it to my mother. And my mother gave me the £8 back, and I had £8. She had the £2. I didn't get to keep anymore. And that's when I got £8 a week until my wage went up a bit, and then I got £10 a week. And I never, ever, till I got married, got any more than £10 a week spending money. That's why I wanted to do my paper round, you know, a bit of extra money from that. The alley had two weavers in. Altogether, there were 10 looms in the alley, but you got five each. You got five looms. And I ran two drop boxes, which had two different colours of yarn in. It dropped down and then came back up. And they had two circular box looms, which could have as many as six different coloured cops in for the material. And then I had one ordinary plain white loom that just did... sometimes it made stuff for bandages, sometimes it just made ordinary white cotton cloth. And they were fascinating. I loved them because there was such a variety of things to look at. The drop boxes did mostly check tablecloths, because they'd have either red and white in, or blue and white, yellow and white, and they did the check tablecloth. But the others made, I did black wash tartan and Royal Scott tartan and various tartans on one of them, and on the other one it was more curtains that were like a jacquard at top with pegs in, and you could get a pattern where they had the leaves and that on curtains. It all worked out. I don't know how it worked, because I didn't understand things in them days, only 15, but that's what the jacquard looms did. They were coloured as well. You just switch it on, and this there was a sleigh, what they called a sleigh. It was a big wooden thing, like a reeding, where all the ends were threaded through. And then there were some eels at back, what you threaded ends through as well. And they go up and down so that the cloth, the ends were going up and down, so that the shook went in different parts of it as it went through each time. And it was a picking stick at the end, and it threw the shook across. And then they were picking it at the other end, and they threw it back, and that's how it worked. So the yarn in the shuckle ran out. Then you had to stop the loom and put a new cop in and refill it with the yarn. And the picking stick was run with a leather strap, and if that strap broke and the stick didn't throw the shuckle across, the shuckle flew out and hit your head, or hit you anywhere really. But I got hit twice on the head when I was working there in that first mill. Well, you could catch your fingers in the rollers, and that blooming hurt if you did that. Because there were a sand roller, he went round one roll and through you know, a bit like a mangle sort of thing, and then it came out and went round a big roll at the bottom, the cloth, and that was, that could be dangerous. And then at the back, where the some of the looms had what they call leading back wheels at the back, so if you got it weaving without weft, that's if you let the shuckle run out and it had no wefting, it had come through just the ends had just come through at the front, and you had to turn the beam at the back to wind it back so that you got to where the cloth were. And the letting back wheels, sometimes I once got my skirt trapped in these letting back wheels, and I had to rip the skirt to get it out. I had a big blooming big rip in my skirt that day, and it, you know, you start going round the leading back wheels, it was a very hazardous. And then there were the loom sweepers that used to come, and they'd get under the looms, and sometimes they were still running when they were under sweeping the dawn from under the looms. There were a lot of danger in the original mill when I worked, when I was only 15. They did change things eventually, but it was quite hazardous, really. The men were paid more money than us in them days, and the tacklers were quite well paid, I think, for mill work. I mean, mill workers were never paid as much as engineering workers and other industries, but obviously the tacklers got a lot more money than us weavers. And see, we had to earn our own money. We got so much. Once I learnt my job after 3 months, and I were on my own, you got a basic pay, and then you had to make your own money by how much cloth you wove in a week. It would be called piecework. And so how hard you worked and that, and you left your looms running while you were having a sandwich and that, you could earn more money than if you stopped them to have your break. And but the men, who the tacklers, they called them then, they earned a lot more money than us. And they sat at boiler house most of the day, chatting, just waiting for the weavers to come, for them to come and fix whatever they needed fixing. They had a much easier job than us, probably a bit heavier when they were working, but they got paid better wages and all. And some of them were quite, you know, a bit, how can I put it, intrusive on women when they shouldn't have been, you know, especially young girls. You had to watch them. There were one of the tacklers particularly were really bad, and if he could touch you with his hands in not nice places, he would do. If he spied his opportunity, if he thought nobody were looking down the alley, you know, you had to sort of shove him away. He were a bit, you know, a bit like, but he called a sexual predator these days, I would think. Shove him away and tell him to clear off. But, you know, you had to shout, because you couldn't hear it, Mel. It was so blooming noisy, it were horrendous. What you were meant when you were shoving him away, your actions itself, even though you told him to clear off, if he couldn't hear you, he knew what you meant. Quite honestly, I don't know whether anybody else did, but I never did. I was always frightened of complaining in case it came back on me and they blamed me for it. I had that fear all my life, you know. Even when I was a little girl, if I told my mum anything that happened, you know, I'd probably finish up getting a clout, well, you must have been doing something first, you know. So it put that fear in me that if I told anybody, they wouldn't believe me. But although a lot of weavers did tell me later on that this one particular guy tried it on me, nearly everybody, every woman at mill, apart from the you know, the middle-aged ladies, if you will. I got married at 18. When I went to work at a mill down church for a short while then, because I had to move down there when I got married with my little boy, you know, and I worked at Chambers at church, but not for very long. And then I went to, after that I went to Stanley Ring Mill, because I could go on evenings there. I did evenings when my children were very tiny. Well, he was pretty good with my husband. He always tipped his wage packet up, and we had some of them black boxes with keys, and we used to put the rent money in one, the gas money in another, the electric money in another. It was pretty efficient that way, and then we could pay the bills. Then we knew what we had left for food after that, so we managed quite well. Even though we were poor, we didn't have any luxury meals, we had no steak teas or anything like that, with simple meals and that, but we managed. And you know, because we had 3 children in 2 years and 11 months, so you know, and I went to work evenings after each one of them, and then when the youngest one got to five, I went full-time then at Stanhill Ring. It was different altogether than the smaller mill, the weaving mill. The little weaving mill was just weaving and a small winding department. But Stanhill Ring was a very big ring mill. Down West End it was. And it, on the ground floor was the... It was where they received all the raw cotton. And then half of it, there were loading bays and that. And then further up through that room, they had the mixing room, what they used to chop all the big bales of cotton up into smaller pieces. And then it went up this piping, like, and it went in onto the next floor into what they call the blowing room. And it were in this big, massive machine. And it was tossed about like that to thin it down and make it to small pieces. And then it went from there, and on the same floor as that, further back, was the card room. And it went in there, into the carding part, and then onto the slubbing machines, which made it quite narrow, you know. About, how can I say, like rope, really. It was like that then, and spun onto these slubbing bobbins. And then it went after that up into the spinning room, that was the third floor up, and then it was spun on the spinning machines and made into cops for the winders and the not for the weavers. It were different yarn at that stage. It was for the winders to wind onto the bobbins in that mill. And then it went up to the winding room, and that's where it went, all these big tubs of perns, they were called, when they come from spinning room, they were called perns, and they were full of cotton. These perns went into the winding room, and then the winders made the perns into big cheeses to go in the creels, which made the... and they left our mill then. They went in the creels and put onto beams, ready to go into the weaving loom, but they had to be gone, be what they call glue size, so that the ends on the beams went stiff, so that when it went actually went into the weaving shed, they'd move up and down quite easily. If it were just floppy cotton, it would have been wafting about in the weaving room, it wouldn't have worked. So they had to put glue size on it to make it stiff, like it had been starched. And then they went into the then they came to the weaving mills then, where, you know, where I originally worked. But it was very interesting. Stanhill Ring, I loved it there. I worked there for a long time at Stanhill Ring. But I went on evening shift when my children were little, and then on the at first it were days. And then it were, after that, it stopped all the days and evening shift, and they went on 6 to 2 and 2 to 10. My husband worked there, so we did opposite shifts then, 6 to 2 and 2 to 10. When he were on 6 to 2, I were on 2 to 10. And we all never saw each other, but that's how we worked, to make enough money to keep the place going. No, the weaving wasn't done at Stanhill Ring, no. And even the glue sizing wasn't done there. It was done... I think there were a mill in... Hilden did it, glue sizing, and there's a mill in Nelson that did glue sizing, and then all these big... They put them on bigger... See, the beams that we made in the beaming section at Stanhill Ring, where we put them on big on beams, there were what they call 10 beams or 8 beams, whichever, how many ends they wanted all together for the material. They were called sets of beams, and if you got a set of 10 beams, when they went to the glue sizing, the whole of them 10 beams went onto one big massive beam for the weaving loom. The whole of the 10, the ends that were on, so we have 500 ends on each, so you'd 10, like, so you'd like 5,000 ends going on the weaver's beam. So we, and because the this was later on, you got really wide looms then. When I worked up first in the mill, the looms were only 36 and 48 inches wide, but the looms later went across a full room, big massive wide looms, and it was absolutely captivating, fascinating work. My mother put me in the mill, but when I got working in it, I found it so fascinating. I was glad that she had done, really. Wonderful experience. Learning all, because I worked in all the different departments in different mills I worked at, so I learned from the beginning, the preparation, not the mixing rooms, and then most of them ended them, from the winding and beaming, and creeling and beaming, and then that was my last job on production, was beaming, making the beams that went in the sizing, and I worked at Hilden doing that, and then after that I was for the last 4 or 5 years of my working life at Hilden, I was a supervisor, and I wasn't on the machines then. I was supervising the winding and beaming departments in the mill. It shut down in the mill, so I weren't due to retire till 2004, but it shut down in 2002 when my husband was a sick man, so I stayed at home after that and looked after him. Yeah, well, we did get better wages then, but what they did at Stanhill Ring Mill, and I was lucky because my children were a bit older then, they put us on what they call, they started an evening shift again for the ladies with younger babies, and they put the shift workers on what they call extended days, and we worked from 7 till 5, a bit like the old time when I worked in the first job I had. We worked from 7 till 5, but we got quite a good substantial rise in pay because we did those extra unsociable hours. And that's what we did. We worked extended days in Stanhill Ring. And then it finally closed down. Then somebody else opened it up for a while. And we still worked there, but we just did ordinary days then. But for a while, for quite a few years, we did extended days from 7 o'clock in the morning till 5. And both me and my husband worked in the card room, and I worked in the winding and beaming room. And my mother saw to the children before school and picked them up from school and waited for us till we got home from work. And that's how we arranged the childcare then. My mum was very good and did it for us. Well, I think all my life was very, very hard work. I don't think some of these young lasses now leaving school could do it, to be honest. Because it was very demanding, and everything had to be precise, because it were all about, people didn't want to wear clothes with big gaps in them where the blooming thing hadn't been worn proper. Everything had to be done, you know, you'd steer towards perfection in everything you did. And if you didn't do it, you got fetched up with cutlooker, as they called them, and you got into trouble. The first looms I worked on, later they took them off on the rollers, the whole lot on one roller. But when I was young in Stanhill Ring, when you'd done 100 yards of cloth, you had to cut it out of the loom, and then you had to fold it up, and the warehouse boy would come and take it away, and there were 100 yards of cloth in there. And then there were men in the cut looking room, because it were called a cutter cloth, you see, 100 yards. So they called them cut lookers. And if they saw a flaw in any of that cloth where you'd had an end out and missed it, if you saw a warehouse boy coming up towards your looms, you used to have to crawl under the loom because you knew you were going to get in trouble with cutlooker, you know. And there were a lot of that, and there were a bit of fear there with that, you know, because you could always, when you fire the looms, you could, you know, because you'd get hold of the sleigh and get a feel of it and put your hand on it, they'd be going forward and backwards really quick. And you'd all that to do, you know, and going to tested all 5 looms that swear we're working right and everything. And then you'd probably go back to the first loom and you'd had an end out for about maybe a couple of yards. And you'd have gone right bottom roller. And then you'd to start, it's confusing, but there were two ends matched. And if one end came out, you'd get your little weaver's comb and take the other end out that matched with it and then scratch it up. And the cloth would look all right then. But if you missed it, and when you realised it had gone right bottom roller, you could only scratch so much of it up. So you knew the cutlooker would see where the gap were, and you knew you were going to get brought up before the cloth went in the warehouse. So you just dreaded the warehouse boy, because he used to be a young lad at warehouse boy, and he used to think, oh no, here he comes, I've got to go and get shouted at now, you know. Well, that were a bit scary. When you're only a kid for like up to Christmas that year, you know, when I had been at school, sat at a school desk, and then all of a sudden you'd all this worry about whether you'd done everything right, you know, and it were a big responsibility for kids at 15, and they don't work now while they're about 25, I don't think, most people. they have it a lot easier in that way now. I think they have it much easier. They don't have children going at mills. At 15, you're literally a child, really. Most people are at school while they're 18, and then after school, they go, some go to, well, they go to college till they're about 18, and then after that, some go to universities. But other people, don't, they go on courses and that. They don't actually have a job. Some they're early 20s, most people these days. Maybe they have it easier, maybe they have it harder to find work than we did. You could leave a job at a mill when I were 15 and walk in another mill following Monday and have a job there. Jobs are easy to get, but and so I think they have it harder that way these days than we had. But I think mill life, I think that's why it's gone now, but it gave me a buzz because I like working hard. I'm always at it at home now when I'm retired. I like working hard, and I wouldn't have liked to have been in a job like sat in an office writing me a pen all the time. I won't like that. I like to be climbing up my ladder in my creel and running my beamer up front and same with my five looms, you know, getting old at sleighing. I keep myself busy all the time. And then you went in at 20 past 7 at morning before you knew where you were, at 20 past 4 at afternoon you were going home because you were so busy all day. And I like the busyness of the mill life for that. And I talked to Peter Hargreaves quite a lot about the mill, because, you know, I speak to him a lot, the man who owns Oswald Plissell Mills, and talk to him about my working life, and he's fascinated by how much I liked it. I loved that bit of it. The busyness of it were amazing. I used to help labourers do their job while I was watching my own machine when I was beaming. Labour used to be at my room, what we called tubbing up, putting the bobbins that were going to be hung in our creels into tubs so that he could wheel them in the creel and hang them on. And I used to empty the pallets and tub up with him while I was watching me on. Because you see, machines then, in later years, the machines stopped if there anything went wrong immediately. Because they had pins that dropped and it told you that you had an end broken. When I went, my first job, there was nothing like that. You'd have to look for every end that broke out like a hawk. I'd still like to go into some sort of production work that keep me busy. I would never like an office job. I mean, I sit down and do my writing now when I want to do it. I sit and relax maybe for an hour and a half in an afternoon and write a poem or write part of a story. I wrote one called That Damn Pandemic about this, what we've got, that story, but that's took me. I'm writing every week about it, different things that's happening every week. To get it down as a record, because in years to come, people will want to know what happened, and we'll all be gone, and nobody will be able to tell them. So I've written it all down. I think it is. I think these day and age that you can't tell a young un to do. They'll say, "Well, I'm not doing that," and they won't do it. And when I was young, if you said that, you got a clip round your ear, and they said, "You're doing it," and that's the end of the story. And this is the way the world's changed. The children, and to me, have more say in what's happening than the actual grown-ups do. And I think this is down to all these government rules about you can't do this to a child, you can't do that to a child, and all that. I blooming at my mother had been in jail over and over again, all over and over again, I think, you know, because we used to get punished, and we felt like we deserved it. It never affected us. And my mother was a good mother. She looked after us and, you know, kept us clean and tidy, and set up all night with us if we were ill. We had all the benefits that way. I don't think that's same anymore. There's not as much intense family life now as what there used to be when we were little. Children seem to just go off in their bedrooms and their parents don't see them till morning after. They're sitting on the machines all the time. We interacted as a family, my parents, and my dad had a piano and we used to sing to them, and all that, we interacted as a family all the time. They don't do that anymore. They just they just go in the bedrooms and play on the machines all the time. These kids, I go down to my children's houses, you know, and the children are just in the bedrooms all the time. I never see them. They're on playing on their computers or these tablets like I have here now in front of me. Oh, but that's my take on that. But I have to say that my experiences in the mill were amazing, and I wrote quite a few poems about mill life, not just that one about my first day. I wrote some about some of the things we used to get up to in the mill, and you know, and, you know, we used to have mock weddings and things like that at Christmas. We had all sorts of things going on in the mill, and it was a wonder, to me, it was a wonderful life. I loved it. Well, like it was when it was a Christmas celebration, so bosses were a bit lenient near the Christmas time. And they used to get a really, one of the most elderly ladies in the mill and one of the youngest boys. And they used to dress the boy in top hat and tails and the woman in a wedding frock. They had a mock wedding, and there were a few of the other old women, especially the larger they were, the better, in the bridesmaids' frocks. And, you know, and we used to have a mock wedding and a celebration, and it was great fun. You know, we loved the mock weddings at Christmas time. We used to do them a lot, you know. And then they'd get the lads to tie up in a... They had these baskets, what they brought the cotton in, and tied up with string round edges and a lid on and tied up with string, and they used to put the girls in them, tie the string up and send you up and down in the lift at Christmas. They used to get up to things that they wouldn't have been allowed to, health and safety these days. But that's what we, but it was great fun. We used to have great fun like that at Christmas. We were allowed a little bit of what I call breathing space around Christmas time. Yeah, and the people were so friendly, and it's the comradeness about it all, if you know what I mean. Everybody were amazing. Even we used to get told off at the older end, but yet they were very fond of us because we were sort of their children in the mill, if you will. I just enjoyed it all, everything. We once did a thing at Stanley Ringham. Somebody brought some, this is Henry Bolton, joke dog muck in, and it went round the mill all day. This, and there were people, you could hear them screaming in the distance, oh my God. And then at the finish, the foreman saw it, and he had us all, and he said, "Now, all my girls, you must stay. This is out of bounds around here. This is disgusting." And he went downstairs, and he got a long mop and bucket and a brush and shovel, and he come back up into the winding room, and when he got there, he didn't go because we moved it. So, you know, and I think all of us just spent all day that day laughing. We were doing his work, but it was just in different parts, keep going round. People keep putting it somewhere and somebody will find it. And this foreman, they were called Fred, and they were so good. "My girls, all this terrible trouble for you. Oh, it's disgusting. You stay out of way. You're out of bounds around here." And all this. And then we saw him coming out at lift, he had a mask on and a brush and a shovel and a mop. And it wasn't there anymore, we'd moved it. So that was hilarious. We used to have days out, you know, we had sports days out at Summer Ring. They used to take us out at weekend, and a few mills used to meet up on a big sports field, and we had a sports day, probably somewhere at Yorkshire Dales, somewhere where there's countryside, and we had this field. And we did all this competition. There were fat races, 100 metres, hurdles, all sorts of races, and all these different mills challenged each other. And then at night, each time we went to a different place, but one week we came up back over Elsenfuss and went into what were called Twaits's Arms then, on Twaits's Road. We went in there and we had a competition with darts, dominoes and other things that they'd play in pubs, and we had that at night, you know. We all had a social evening after the sports day. We used to have really, they were good at mills, they were good days. They were, really. We had wakes week every July, and what it was in the mill, we got holidays with pay, which is different than paid holidays. And what they used to do, they used to have a percentage of your wage, whether they took it off you or whether the boss put it in, I have no idea. But you got a percentage of your wage put away every week, and you got a big holiday pay. So summer holidays, it were like maybe equivalent to 2 or 3 weeks pay on top of your wages. It were called holidays with pay. But all the other holidays you had, like Easter, we only had Good Friday and Easter Monday off then in them days. And we used to have 2 days at September, Monday and Tuesday. And then Christmas, they just had Christmas Day, Boxing Day, New Year's Day off. First when I first went to work. And them days you didn't get paid for, you had what they call broken weeks. And the whole of your holiday pay was paid to you at July holidays for the wakes fortnight. And so you got quite a bit of extra money. So people who were going away, you know, they enjoyed it like that, the mill workers, because they got used to it, and they put up with the broken weeks at the short holidays so that they could have good money in the summer holidays. When I started work, I went the first year I went to Windy Harbour Caravan Camp. It's near, that's funnily enough, near Poultonley Farm. It's still there, Windy Harbour Caravan site. We went there 2 years on the run, the first 2 years I were at work, and then we went to Butlins at Pathelly. And then after that I were married, so I did get holidays because my sister-in-law lived in Blackpool, so we used to go to Shadow Hotel in Blackpool, my husband's brothers and his wife, so we used to go there every, up when my husband went off work, you know, when children were babies. When we were off work, we used to go there for a week to Blackpool in this hotel where his brother lived. But that's, you know, I didn't go abroad till 1983.